Hey, who's that big patriotic jerk?
No matter what they say, women deep down love a patriotic guy who knows how to play beach volleyball.
I appreciate his body type and sense of fashion.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. We got a very, very big show for you. We'll be joined this hour, a little bit later, by Savannah Hernandez. Of course, she was assaulted by a family of goblins while out doing some good old-fashioned journalism and covering some leftist riots. We'll be talking to her and getting an update as to the latest and whether they've been arrested and charged and what exactly the future of free speech in this country is. Then we'll be joined in the second hour by Michael Yawn, in the third hour by Kyle Serafin, and then Matt Bracken takes over in the fourth hour to interview Victor Boot. That's going to be a very big interview. So giant show we have for you today. And we start off with that little meme video by Maverick Darby, which is interesting. I didn't know what it was. The crew said, "We got this, you know, we got this new meme video from Darby. You want to play it?" I said, of course I want to play it. Let's do it." Not knowing that it had to do with J.D. Vance, which is very coincidental because that's exactly what we're going to start the show with. J.D. Vance is not having a very good couple of days. It's actually going terribly, not just for America, but for J.D. Vance in particular and his political hope into the future. There's actually a story here. J.D. Vance can't stop losing. And I'm not even criticizing J.D. Vance for this. He's really been given some impossible tasks, but they still aren't going very well. Obviously, the negotiations with Iran came to nothing. Not that they were ever going to come to anything, but they came to absolutely nothing, as in like almost less than nothing. As in, I guess we're going to have to start over, and that's apparently what we're doing. Iran and U.S. may resume talks this weekend despite port blockade, even though it's kind of not a port blockade because tankers are passing through the Strait of Hormuz on the first day of the U.S. blockade, including Chinese vessels defying Trump's blockade of the Strait of Hormuz as U.S.-sanctioned tanker brazenly sails through waterway unchallenged. So once again, I mean, this entire Iran conflict has been a series of bluffs, essentially. And the difference between these bluffs and some of the bluffs from our past is that Iran keeps calling them. They keep just doing the thing that they're not supposed to do, and then we don't respond, and that makes us look weak and makes them look stronger. And it's basically just been that on repeat over and over again. And so, of course, as we reported, I mean, I didn't think that there was any hope for a ceasefire anyway. Like, the negotiations were always kind of a farce because it was just the sort of escape that Trump needed the last time Iran called his bluff on, you know, committing genocide against them, essentially ending their civilization forever, as he put it. So I didn't expect there to be any really positive outcome from the ceasefire, especially not with Israel bombing Lebanon and flagrant violation of the ceasefire agreement that was agreed to by Trump, according to the Pakistan PM or president. But let's go to clip number 31 here. This is J.D. Vance doing an interview following the negotiations with Iran. He sort of changed his story a little bit and then said something he probably shouldn't have said. Here's J.D. Vance on Fox News last night.
We have the military advantage. We now have additional economic pressure that we're applying on them through the blockade that we've imposed on their oil coming out of the Straits of Hormuz. So We have a lot of cards. We have the leverage, and we're going to see what the Iranians do with that.
And so that's how the blockade works. U.S. naval ships stop Iranian-flagged vessels going to the Strait through the Strait of Hormuz?
Not just Iranian-flagged vessels, Brett, but any vessel that we know is going to Iranian ports or has come from Iranian ports. You're probably going to see some vessels try to reflag themselves, but of course we're going to know, because we have very good intelligence, which ships are going in and which ships are coming out that are connected to Iran. But Brett, here's the very interesting thing about all this, is that the only thing the Iranians have been able to do, they haven't, of course, beaten us militarily. They've had their military been decimated. They haven't been able to prosecute the case when it comes to weapons of war. What they have done is engage in this act of economic terrorism against the entire world. They basically threatened any ship that's moving through the Straits of Hormuz. Well, as the President of the United States showed, two can play at that game. And if the Iranians are going to try to engage in economic terrorism, we're going to abide by a simple principle that no Iranian ships are getting out either. We know that's a big deal to them. We know that applies additional economic leverage. And again, Brett, the president wants the Iranian people to thrive.
All right, so that's J.D. Vance kind of letting it slip that we're doing a little bit of terrorism. Again, maybe this sounded better in his head. Maybe he didn't mean to let it slip like this, but saying, hey, all they know how to do is terrorism and two can play at that game. Maybe not the best argument to make when this entire conflict rests on our moral superiority, our supposed and fabricated moral superiority. But it gets a little deeper than that, because if you really think about it, he said economic terrorism, a subset of terrorism, not terrorism in the classical sense, economic terrorism. And in that regard, we have been waging economic terrorism on Iran for years, and especially over the last year with Scott Bessent coming in, Treasury Secretary. We've played the clips over and over. He has made the statement over and over, multiple instances of him bragging about using tariffs, using economic warfare against Iran to inspire the uprisings that Mossad then armed in an attempt to overthrow the Iranian regime in this regime change war. Okay, so it's not exactly a, hey, if they can do it, we can do it. It's more like we've been doing it for a couple years now, and they're doing it back, I guess. But then there's, you know, not economic terrorism, just regular terrorism, which is more like what we're engaged in, bombing schools, bombing universities, bombing bridges, threatening to bomb the entire country. I mean, that's straight up terrorism. So we might be a little bit more guilty than Iran in that regard. And then there's sort of the terrorism that is aimed directly at the Iranian negotiators and leadership. From the Washington Post, this is a excerpt from one of their articles about the negotiations with J.D. Vance. They say, fourth, carry out a final barrage of leadership strikes, eliminating the Iranian officials who'd been spared for the purpose of negotiations. Iran leaders must be made to understand that their lives literally depend on reaching a negotiated settlement to Trump's liking. If they refuse to do so, they will be killed. It's like, what? I'm sorry, are we being run by Genghis Khan? What is going on here? What, it's like every level is terrorism. We've waged economic terrorism to put us in this, in the position where, you know, they basically felt like they were being backed against a wall and needed to fight. We've done just straight up terrorism, bombing their citizens with no strategic purpose. And now I guess we're engaged in extra, you know, whatever, double dare economic terrorism by threatening to blow up ships going through the Strait of Hormuz. Thankfully, so far, that appears also to have been a bluff, because it's not totally possible. I mean, it's just not very possible for us to do, considering the fact that if we want to close the Strait of Hormuz, we have to actually get close to the Strait of Hormuz, and we aren't capable of doing that. In fact, we're sending the USS George Bush, I think it is, the aircraft carrier, unless I have that name wrong. But we're not able to go through the land by Yemen because we're afraid of the Houthis hitting our ship. So as we speak, I believe it is the USS George Bush is now traveling around the entire continent of Africa to make its way up to the Persian Gulf, because we apparently don't feel confident traveling through the Suez Canal. Which again, it's everything kind of coming apart. It's everything that we're trying to do failing and all of our threats coming to nothing. And the ultimate result of this is, of course, exactly what we've been telling you since the very beginning. Total economic collapse. Yeah, this is the image of the jets, Pakistan fighter jets actually escorting the negotiators back to Iran because they know that they'll be killed. They know that because they didn't get an agreement, they were likely very high up on an Israeli/American hit list. And so they were actually escorted back home with a swarm of jet fighters. And I saw somebody online say, you know, it's not the jet fighters that are protecting them. It's the fact that the jet fighters are from Pakistan and Pakistan has a nuclear bomb, because what this war against Iran is teaching everybody, Iran in particular, is that you really need a nuclear bomb and you should really never give it up once you get one. That was the mistake Muammar Gaddafi made. So again, if your goal, as laid out by the Trump administration, is denying Iran a nuclear weapon, everything we're doing is counterproductive to that. If your goal is to better America and make us more unchallenged on the world stage, this is directly contributing to the collapse of that mission. So this is the strange part. I'm not even out of alignment with the stated goals of the Iran war. It's just the Iran war is obviously counterproductive to all of it, to absolutely all of it. And anybody who's paying attention just can recognize this and knows this, and everybody else is just lying about it. That's the only thing I can assume, because how do I know if nobody else does? But it's not just that the negotiations didn't go well for J.D. Vance, even though, according to the Iranian side of things, Iran-U.S. was, quote, inches away from a deal in Pakistan. And then maybe there was a phone call with somebody in Israel, and then everything fell apart. Darn it. Whoopsie-daisy. We were so close, but it just didn't quite happen. So again, it's not even that, like, J.D. Vance couldn't have gotten it done. It's just he has been given an impossible task. And I can't help but wonder if it's in part to destroy his, you know, political future. Because that is the outcome one way or another. He is being saddled with both the attack on Iran and the failure to stop the attack on Iran. And obviously, he and his media team are trying desperately to counteract that by having lots of articles come out about how J.D. Vance was the only one trying desperately to stop the war in Iran, which may very well have been true. But regardless, he is being saddled with the failures now. But it's not just that. It's the fact that J.D. Vance is an outspoken Catholic, and Donald Trump is fighting the Pope. So there's that. And again, I'm not trying to, like, just fall into the cliches, but reality falls into the cliches. Cliches are cliches for a reason, and it's because they're constantly recognizable in actual life. And the cliche in this case would be that Donald Trump / the American government is the attack dog of Israel and is basically just at their beck and call. And if you look at the last couple of fights Trump has gotten in the last week, like today I get on, I think I went to Drudge or something, and there was a link that was like, Trump at Maloney's throat, you know, Trump fighting the prime minister of Italy. And it's like, what the hell is this about? And it's like, Italy's Maloney suspends defense cooperation deal with Israel. Okay. All right, I got it. Trump comes out and says, we're cutting off Spain. We're not going to do any more work with Spain. We hate Spain. And you look at, well, why is he saying that? Oh, because they also canceled their defense agreement with Israel. Okay, it's starting to make sense. Why is he fighting the Pope? Why the hell do you think? Why is he fighting Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and Alex Jones and Megyn Kelly and Marjorie Taylor Greene? It's all the same answer. They're all Israel's enemies. So again, not to fall into the cliche, but it's like, it's to the point where you can like answer questions like this just on this assumption. I see Trump is fighting Maloney. The first thing I think is she probably did something to Israel. Gee, what do you know? That's exactly right. He's not getting in fights. Like, there hasn't been a week of him, you know, going to the mat with Chuck Schumer or anybody on the left. Nobody here in America, not even the Republicans that are trying to pass amnesty or not passing the SAVE Act, he doesn't have very many unkind words for them. Of course, he has unkind words for the challengers of the likes of Lindsey Graham. But it's all for Israel. But it's all, so he's like, literally, it's just, if you want to know why Trump is doing what he's doing, the answer is Israel is instructing him. Israel is giving him treats, and he is performing for them. It's very pathetic. It's very sad. It is not for the American interest. It is 100% in the interest of Israel, and it's just absolutely pathetic to see our country being ripped apart at the seams while our president starts fights all over the world and with us in particular over our lack of enthusiasm with committing suicide so Israel can become a world power and a global superstate. So J.D. Vance, again, is sort of caught in between his faith and the president. Pope Leo says he does not fear Trump, citing gospel as he pushes back in feud over the Iran war. In Leo, Trump faces a different kind of papal opponent. And by the way, I'm about to insult the Pope too, so don't get me wrong here. I'm not Catholic, and I think it's weird that a bunch of people in our country have a foreign king, even if he's from Chicago. That's weird too. And I'll get to why the Pope is falling into the same dichotomy everybody else is in just a second, but this is another aspect of J.D. Vance's continual loss this week as he loses over and over. Let's go to clip 32 here. This is Vance talking about the conflict between the Pope and President Trump. Let's watch.
Do you think that when the president says it's hurting him very badly, going catering to the radical left, it's hurting the Catholic Church? Do you agree with the president there?
Well, look, I think the president has the prerogative to set American foreign policy. He's got the prerogative to set American immigration policy. He has to look out for the interests of the United States of America. And that inevitably means that when the Vatican comments on issues of public policy, sometimes there's going to be agreement, of course, and sometimes there's going to be disagreement. I think that's a reasonable thing, Brett. I don't think that it's particularly newsworthy, but I certainly think that in some cases, it would be best for the Vatican to stick to matters of morality, to stick to matters of what's going on in the Catholic Church, and let the President of the United States stick to dictating American public policy. But when they're in conflict, they're in conflict. I don't worry about it too much, Brett. I think it's a natural thing. I'm sure it'll happen in the future, and it's not that big of a deal that it happened in the past.
All right, so, you know, I agree with J.D. Vance there, essentially. I mean, he's right. The Catholic Church is not helping America. Catholic Charities have been a major importer of a lot of the illegal immigrants. Israeli Catholic Charities fund the immigrants here and collect American taxpayer dollars to give to immigrants, which is especially absurd because they do the same thing in Europe, where the vast majority of immigrants are Muslim, and Christianity in Europe is already like teetering on the brink, and now almost every day there's a new church that's been burned by a Muslim immigrant somewhere in Europe. I mean, it's just full-on attack there, and yet the Pope says nothing about it. The Pope actually, if they do say anything about it, encourage and basically say it's a moral imperative that you allow yourself to be taken over and conquered. This is not Christian in the slightest. There's nothing Christian about this. It's Christian if somebody really needs help and you're actually helping them. It's not Christian for just some guy to come up to you, lie to you about a trouble that he's in, and then demand your money. You're not being charitable then. You're being a sucker. You're being a fool. There's nothing good or moral about being taken advantage of, right? There's nothing moral about taking advantage of people, and there's nothing moral about being taken advantage of, about being a sucker or a fool who is thinks you're giving to charity when really you're giving to a thief. There's nothing charitable about that. This is absurd. And at the same time, Pope Leo is performing this ceremony in a mosque or something. Pope Leo places a wreath of flowers and prays for the Algerians who died in the Algerian War of Independence against French colonial rule at this monument in Algiers. We can go ahead and play that video we have of him delivering this giant wreath, which is very interesting because apparently when it comes to Muslim countries, non-white countries, he's in favor of the natives violently throwing out the interlopers. He's in favor of decolonialism when it's white people who actually built the whole country being driven out by the native Africans. But if it's Europeans who don't want Africans there, if it's the native Europeans who don't want to see their countries taken over by colonists, then Pope Leo condemns them and says that they're being evil. So there is a severe disconnect here. There's a double standard that's very hard to ignore. As Harrison Pitts on X puts it, it turns out expelling unwanted foreigners is quote-unquote holy. After all, those expelled were Europeans. Everything Pope Leo condemns as hateful nativism in the West, he applauds as heroic decolonization in the Third World. Let's stop pretending this is in any way based. And of course, when you look at the Algerian civil war in the first place, the whole thing was ridiculous. When the French showed up there, it was nothing. It was just like a couple runes from like a civilization that existed 1,000 years before. And then the French came in and built everything. And they built everything. It was a backwater, less than Third World. I mean, it was just nothing. And then the French came in, built it up for like hundreds of years. And then after hundreds of years of building up this country, the natives decide that actually this belongs to us and kicked all the French people out. And that's being celebrated and honored and glorified by the Pope, who goes out of his way to condemn lesser actions in Europe. Like, I was going to say the same thing in Europe, but it's not really the same, is it? It's not really the same. See, the Algerians murdered a bunch of French Catholics. They just like violently purged them and killed a lot of them. It was like very brutal, just sort of endless massacres. In fact, we have a sample here. The largest massacre of the day occurred at El Halal pyrite mining town, where about 130 European and 2,000 Muslims lived and worked together. The mob was composed of hundreds of Muslims, both men and women, who were mostly armed with farming tools, axes, sharpened shovels, or knives, and were led by 25 FLN members. They arrived at around 11 a.m. when most of the Pied Noir men were working in the mine and women and children were at home. A bloody massacre ensued in which European women were raped and disemboweled or decapitated. Children had their throats slit and babies were slammed against walls. Some of the local Muslim inhabitants initially watched without reacting, eventually joined in the excited mob as it massacred Europeans under chants of Allahu Akbar that blended with Algerians' women's ululations. The attack caused the murder of 37 Europeans, mostly women and children. Okay. So that's what the Pope is honoring and glorifying and placing a wreath at the tomb, you know, memorializing that. Meanwhile, if you simply want the government to stop allowing migrants into your country, the Pope condemns you as a hateful bigot, a xenophobe who must be opposed. But hey, bunch of Muslims slaughtering women and children because they're Catholic and French, that's a glorious act of decolonization. So this is the false dichotomy, and it's literally everywhere.
We have it all. Ultramethylene blue, we have the best. The Shilajit, we have the best. The turmeric, we have the best. We have the best spike protein, pro-cardiovascular, ultimate life force. The best Irish sea moss gummies and capsules. Incredible. Research for yourself. We have the best at theultramethylene.com. And if you buy any of them, they're 50% off when you sign up for AutoShip. Cancel anytime. And then you guarantee it never sells out. They hold it back. You get 50% off on future orders. And anybody that downloads for free the Android or the Apple app, you find both links to it at alexjonesapp.com. It's free. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top of that. Now, I had to convince Pitley to do this. They were a little skeptical because they like to give you good deals, but not this good because it's loss leader when you use the app. But because we have an 80%+ reorder rate on things like Ultramethylene Blue, it's actually working because you get it, you love it, and you keep ordering it. So these are great products. I want to induce you to try them. You know our information's hardcore. Try the products. It's just as hardcore. 1776 worldwide. We will crush the 1984 globalist system. God bless you all.